It is something that perhaps a lot of organizations don't put enough effort into, and especially from the small business perspective. Human resources, what does it mean? And some of the challenges that employers face each and every day, and some of the challenges that employees face each and every day. I want to take a look back at some of the biggest challenges we saw in 2011 and maybe talk about some of the success stories. Joining us for a conversation about this, from the BC Human Resources Management Association, joining us for another conversation is Ian Cook, Director of Research and Learning with the organization. Ian, thanks for coming back on again. Great to have you here.
Pleasure to be here, Murray.
I really enjoyed our previous discussion, and for those that missed it, we were talking an awful lot about some of the day-to-day challenges that people experience. When we take a look back at 2011, what sticks out in your mind as something both employers and employees have had to deal with?
So one thing I think has been key for both, and it's something we've spoken about a number of times, but the level of stress, the workload stress that has been present through 2011. You know, for post-recession, a lot of people were just crisis mode, keeping things going. 2011, we sort of stabilized out as to this is the way things operate, but many organizations are still cautious. They're still uncertain about what the futures hold. They've held back on hiring because that brings liabilities. They don't want to staff up to their full-time complement again, but that's meant a lot of people are dealing with both a lot of change in their work and then increased workloads. So organizations are having to manage that, and employees are having to manage that. You know, the pressure on the trying to keep the work and life in some semblance of balance seems to have been strong, a real challenge for all parties over 2011.
If we take a look back, Ian, at 2008 and how we had to cope as a result, it sort of crept up on us, the bottom fell out, the financial crisis ensues, and North America and a large part of the world was walloped. And we had to cope. We had to tighten our belts, and I'm sure you heard this all over the place. People were reining in their spending.
Yeah.
We make it to 2011, and we think, oh, it looks like we're out of the woods. No, we're not. And now we're at the point where we see, as we wrap up 2011, we know that 2012 is going to be a little bit leaner of a year again. And that means all that hope that people had that we'll see some extra people on the shop floor or in the store or at that small business or in your company, they may not be there. And some of the polling I've seen, you know, those C-suite polls say that some companies think they'll hire and a lot of companies think they'll stay the same, and a few companies say they're going to have to make some cutbacks. My point is, we know things aren't going to get excessively rosy in 2012.
Absolutely, and I think that's, again, an important piece for employers to keep in mind, and certainly something that HR professionals keep an eye on is everybody's been looking to be out of the woods. I think it's a great phrase, and the reality that we've come to realize through 2011 that actually these are the woods we're going to be in for some time, that there isn't the end of the tunnel where we're returned to the kind of free-flowing financial days prior to 2008. Austerity is the name of the game. That's how things are going to be run. Everything's going to be very tight, very focused. Hiring will take place, but it'll take place with much more caution, much more discipline in terms of who gets selected. So, you know, everybody's having to work harder, focus more, be more clear and careful about how they get into employment, maintain employment. And so it just makes the whole experience more testing, I think, more challenging.
And in saying that, And I think those that do the hiring believe this. Those that are looking for jobs may not. Jobs are no longer the easy, accessible, you know, sort of entity that they used to be.
Yeah.
A job posting is a very serious thing.
Yeah.
And employers treat it very seriously. A lot goes into it. And I think maybe some people still have the attitude that, you know, jobs are, you know, a God-given right. Well, they're not. They're kind of a privilege, to be honest.
I know. I think that's a very interesting way to look at it. We've certainly seen a huge shift in the practice of our membership in terms of the hiring, where there's an awful lot more assessment going in. You know, back in the boom times of 07, 08, we had what was called warm body hiring. I know organizations in the hospitality industry, if somebody turned up for the interview, they were offered the job.
Absolutely.
That was not normal. That was
It was aberrational, to say the least.
For sure. Now those same organizations will put somebody through two or three testing processes before they actually commit to that. You know, the lesson learned from 08 is when you take on an employee, you take on a liability. You have severance costs and various costs for then terminating that contract. So if you're going to take on those costs, you want to be really sure it's the right person and they're really going to deliver for you. So the jobs have become less, we've got a lot of work going on, we'll just put another body against it and hopefully that'll work. People are far more conscious about what work needs done, what's the skill, how they're going to fit in the team, how they're going to grow with the business. So there's a far more focus. And again, those organizations that are doing well already had that kind of discipline. I know a number of firms locally in BC who, even before the recessionary times, they'd take 6 to 8 weeks, you know, a series of 6 to 8 interviews before they hired anybody.
Interesting.
They haven't changed their practice, and they've been very robust through the downturn. But, you know, they understood that hiring was a hugely important piece. So we've seen that discipline come back to a lot more organizations. And that, if you're looking for work, that's going to feel like the barriers to getting in have gone up.
Well, but what does that, or what should that tell prospective employees?
Basically, as I would see it, it's become a much more complicated marketing game. You know, a lot of people come to me looking for advice, and the advice I tend to give is waiting for a job posting and putting your resume against that is a low kind of return way to play the game. It's kind of like putting all your chips on a single number on a roulette table. You know, you got a 1 in 36 chance of actually getting anything. Being much more proactive and focused on what do I bring that's valuable, thinking about marketing yourself, thinking about positioning yourself to the value you bring to an employer. So what skills do I have? What connections do I have? What differentiates me from other people? And finding ways to tell your story, be that just through informational interviews, be that through networking, be that through, you know, talking to friends who work in the company. There's still there always has been, and there's still even more so kind of, that's not quite a back door, but it's more of a relationship connection based way into work. And that you need to be running that strategy as well.
So what does 2012 look like in your estimation? If people, we know, and this probably goes through the management ranks as well, people are stressed out, they're a little frayed at the edges, they're feeling perhaps a little overworked and underappreciated.
Yep.
How, in saying that, setting up 2012, what does that mean for your everyday average employee?
So for the employee, if I can actually start by talking about the employer, I think what that means for the employer is they need to start bringing a focus back into the experience of their employees. You know, the recent surveys have shown that 1 in 3 employees will leave if they could. That's 2012, but we're now running in a normal context. This is how business is. Our strategies are all flowing. If we've got the people we need, then we want to hold on to them, and we want to get the best out of them. So some things will start to grow in 2012. The resource sector is looking to expand. Construction is looking to expand. Some high-tech areas are looking to expand. So there are opportunities out there. And so you need to be looking after your people and looking at retaining them. And that means taking the lid off certain things. You know, we see training budgets get cut very fast as soon as anything slows down. Training is one of the best ways to retain people. If people feel like they're learning and growing with your business, then they'll stay because it keeps them marketable, keeps them employable. So we're encouraging employers to think about that, not just as I need to train this person to do the job, but actually by providing learning, you get a better person, you get retention, you get a lift in morale, you get an awful lot of benefits from the dollars that are spent there. So we would see employers needing to actually start adding back in a sense of this is the direction and this is how we're helping make sure that the business is successful and thriving. You know, that might be taking a careful look at your headcount and saying, okay, we can't hire permanently, but we can hire temporary, or we can look at certain tasks that we can get done on a piece rate or an hourly rate, outsourcing those kinds of pieces, and actually really rethinking how all the work is done. So it's not just loaded onto 2 or 3 people who've been your kind of loyal
go-to people.
Strong go-to people, yeah.
But let me ask you, just in that vein, you know this as well as I do. Once money disappears out of budget, especially when it's either training or skills upgrading, it's very difficult to get that money back. That's just the reality.
For sure, yep.
So how do you make that case?
Well, I think you look at the case of looking at the research and looking at some of the people who are in your organization and saying, you know, what would happen to us if this person left? What would happen to us if this person went? How much do we pay them? What is it worth us spending to actually keep that person in our business? So, for example, if you have a fairly specialist role, your costs to replace that person can be 2 times their salary. The time it might take you to find that person in this market could be 6 to 8 months, maybe a year. So how much money are you going to lose if that person leaves relative to the amount you would actually need to spend on giving them a meaningful training experience? When you look at those two side by side, the dollars that you should spend on training are they're pretty small relative to what you stand to lose.
I agree. I concur. I just think some employers, rightly or wrongly, have developed the attitude, you know what, there's plenty of fish in the sea. I can find someone any day.
And they're not right. There's plenty of people out there. But those people don't necessarily have the skills. Those people don't necessarily have the background experience. Those people aren't necessarily in the right place. Even though the unemployment figure is where it is, we're seeing a well-documented skills mismatch where what you need to compete in China, what you need to compete in the high-tech arena, what you need to compete in a diversified global marketplace is not the people who are currently looking for work, or they don't directly have those experience. Again, it's coming back to this training piece. There are not plenty of fish in the sea that can do what you need to do tomorrow to the level that you need to do it. So that's where retention becomes a very important piece.
How do you convey that message out then? I mean, because it seems as though just a lot of people don't either ascribe to that belief or make that connection or even think that way.
Yep. One of the things that we do is we look at vacancy rates. So we track data from a number of different organizations across Canada, and we track that over the last 2.5 years. So, you know, you kind of think, well, if there's lots of fish in the sea, then vacancy wouldn't be increasing. But since 2009, vacancies have almost trebled. So what that says is organizations aren't being able to fill the positions that they have open. And again, if you put the organizations are more cautious about hiring, so we're only going to hire the right person, and then there's still a 7.1, 7.2 unemployment rate, but the number of positions that are open are 3 times higher than they were in 2008.
Gotcha.
That's the vacancy rates is far more telling than the unemployment figure. Unemployment figures significantly lag a kind of upturn in the economy. It doesn't really tell you the quality of what's in the labor pool. So, and again, sort of corroborating that from conference board information, they have a thing called the Help Wanted Index. They look at online job postings and correlate that with people who are looking for work. They keep tightening, and in December, the index tightened again, saying there's fewer people looking work for all of online postings that are out there. So it's another way to look at how tight is the labor market, and the plenty of fish in the sea is not the right view.
Well, and you talk about the warm body hiring strategy that we saw before. If and when Canada does get back on its feet, I can only think, based on some of our demographics, Ian, that we are going to be back where we were before, and that's probably in a real challenge, a bit of a hiring crunch.
And that's already taken place in certain instances. We've got colleagues in Alberta, and it's already hot in Alberta. I've got a colleague who works in construction. He, talking to him about 6 months ago, he said, we've already put back in all the perks, benefits, and bonuses that we were running in 2008. You know, I'm having jobs reclassified on a three-month, two-month cycle. The escalation in kind of demand for reward and the need to keep people is just where it was back in 2008. We know the resource sector, the sort of mining, oil, gas, the construction that's going to go up on in the north is going to start pulling in a lot of skilled trades, a lot of opportunities. I understand C-SPAN, given their recent contract.
Absolutely.
They just haven't. I think their website just says, send us your resume. We don't care. There's not a job you're applying for. Just send us who you are because we just need people. And again, you know, the retirement demographic is going to hit them fairly significantly. You know, I think they have, the average age of their workforce is relatively high. So much as they've got work for the next 10, 15 years, they're going to need to replace at least half of their workforce in that time.
We're speaking with Ian Cook, Director of Research and Learning with the BC HRMA, also a certified human resources professional. Then what does the employer need to do? What about the managerial ranks? What about that group of, that cadre of people between those on the shop floor or those at the till and those in the executive offices? These are people that are often overlooked and, quite frankly, overworked.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of things that I think employers need to be. 2012 for me, as an employer, is a year of looking forward and actually saying, these are the woods we're in. This is how we're working. How do I make sure I'm getting the best from people? We're past survival mode. We're past sort of reorientation mode. This is getting back into the steady state. That managerial group is, again, very, very crucial. It's been shown to be very crucial in actually driving performance. Recently was on a Google webinar, and they've used numbers to prove just how valuable that management group is if they have the right skills. So a lot of it comes down to training and training about managing a multi-generational workforce. You know, all of the folks who will be in those frontline positions are Gen Y. They have a different expectation of work. They have a different series of needs, demands, interests. They have a different way of wanting to be engaged with work. You're going to need your managers to understand and be skillful at actually getting the best out of that workforce. And that's not the old command and control, you know, do as I say, you know, follow my lead type approach. It's far more involved. It's far more coaching oriented. It's far more give them a goal and some resources and a timeline and manage them to deliver that themselves as opposed to just tell and follow. So big transitions in the management skills that will be required to be successful with the new workforce. And again, smart employers are already working on that. We'd encourage more people to really think about how they're making that transition. And again, right now it might feel quite comfortable where you've got your 15-year, 20-year employee. They know your business inside out and backwards. They know your customers inside out and backwards. You've got to be thinking about when are they retiring. And even if it's 2 to 3 years, you know, thinking about how you take that knowledge from those individuals and impart it to somebody else 6 months before they actually sign out of work isn't the right way to go. That a three-year window is probably a reasonable window to start transferring all that knowledge across. So setting up mentoring programs, setting up ways of really helping the younger generation learn the skills that the older generation possesses and uses for you is an important piece.
But it should also be said, Ian, that even though a lot of people may be in their mid to late 50s, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to retire in the next 2 or 3 years. As we see, a lot of people are working longer and, in fact, delaying retirement because what they thought they would have or what they need to have to stay retired isn't there.
Yep, and that brings its own challenges. As an employer, you're often trying to balance a range of needs and a range of issues. It kind of really reflects back on some of the really potentially costly parts of the multi-generational workforce. If you're having those individuals stay in your organization and stay past their retirement age, what opportunities is that holding back for your up-and-comers? So again, there's a whole transition succession flow through. You know, folks who are Gen X leaders, they've been there for 5 years. They figure when this person hits 65, then there's going to be some opportunity in the business. They've got the same needs to keep earning money and being able to pay their mortgage, pay for their kids' education, all those kinds of things. They're all still there. So if your older generation stay, you can expect some of that middle generation to go looking for leadership roles that they're ready for somewhere else and actually just being able to try and manage that. So I think organizations will get more flexible where you won't necessarily, you can't force somebody to retire. That's not legal. There is no mandatory retirement age. But actually trying to manage that whole transition where, you know, maybe it's consulting work, maybe it's project work. The individual who doesn't want to retire but wants to stay working has a more flexible work arrangement that, again, their value comes back to the business, and you see that value, but the leadership roles go to that next generation so they can really start to use their skills, continue to grow, and keep their abilities in your business. So the whole workforce planning component, whether you be big or small, is very much more complicated than it has been, and we'll see a lot of change there as well.
If people want more information, Ian, perhaps point them to your organization's website is a great place to start because it sounds like a lot of learning needs to occur here.
Yeah, so we have an electronic news feed called hrvoice.org. So if you put hrvoice.org into Google, you'll find our newsfeed. It's a free site, and all of these kinds of issues and conversations are discussed there. It would be it's searchable. You can come in and find a wealth of information on that site, and we're very happy to share it.
One final note, if people are looking for, you know, the very latest and greatest, I know your organization will either help lead seminars or certainly get the word out. I understand there's an upcoming one to do with legal issues as well. I think it's info that people can't get enough of.
Sure. Yeah, we run a learning program for HR practitioners, and some of the content is very relevant. Whether you're an HR practitioner or you have responsibility for HR, we have a calendar on our website and events right across BC that look at legal issues, look at recruitment issues, those kinds of pieces. Again, people are welcome to come and find that stuff and take advantage of those pieces.
Ian, all the best for Christmas and the New Year. Thanks very much for making time for us, and we look forward to another conversation next year.
And you, Murray, it's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Fine.
Ian Cook is the Director of Research and Learning with the BC HRMA. He's also a certified human resources professional.